How's it going, everybody? You're tuned in to Geek Speak here at 4:30 on Monday. I'm Louis Gerardo, and via live remote, we have Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk.
Hi, Louis.
Tuning in. How's it going, Matt?
Going good. Got a bunch of little projects today, and
Are you, like, sitting around in your bathrobe?
No, I was in coding regalia earlier today, but
I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
Oh no, that just means PJ pants and a comfortable shirt.
Okay, got it. Well, I, on the other hand, am in my bathrobe, and there's nobody here to argue that point. So, anyway, it's been an eventful couple of weeks. We're in the process of reopening our country, at least so I hear. And Matt and I brainstormed. We've got some real little sweet little nuggets to discuss with the listeners. But we should start out by saying that if you have any tech questions or you want to weigh in on the conversation, you can give us a ring at 970-963-2976. That's our studio line. And our operators are standing by. If you need your cables jiggled, if your Outlook is not searching properly, perish the thought, or any number of other things, or maybe your new installation of Microsoft Edge on your Mac computer is not operating properly, you can give us a ring. So anyway, we... We're reviewing
Microsoft Edge. Being back on the Edge just cracks me up. It's so much fun.
Yeah, back on the Edge.
Back on the Edge on the nice. Mac. Yep.
Yeah. So let's talk about that real quick. So my understanding is, Matt just asked me if I had downloaded it, and I didn't realize that it was available on the Mac platform, which I think is pretty audacious, but there's a really good reason why they did that. And tell us why, Matt. Do you know why?
Well, I think it's just to be competitive, just to make sure that your environment is out there so you can use it, and we'll see see what the adoption looks like. I mean, to me, Microsoft Edge or Internet Explorer is basically used to download Firefox or Chrome at this point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Everything has its purpose in this world. And you were telling me that Microsoft Edge, the new Microsoft Edge, has a dirty little secret. What is that?
Oh, no, that was the original one, the Internet Explorer for PowerPC on Mac.
No, I'm talking about the fact that Microsoft Edge is based on
Chrome
technology.
So yeah, the what do they call it? The interpreter, the engine that displays your HTML in the browser is based off Chromium. So it's the same as Chrome Chrome, Opera, or Vivaldi, and there's a number of other ones as well that are niche. Web browsers that you can download and use. So I've been using Vivaldi, and it's been a nice little tool for that.
Got it. You're really going for Baroque here.
Oh, there's all kinds of cool stuff if you start digging.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist making a geeky musician joke. Now, were you saying, so the actual engine that runs Chrome, and Matt actually helped me clarify this, because I've been coming across people with copies of a thing on their computer called Chromium. And, because of the similarity between the name of Chromium and Chrome, I figured, it must just be, it sounds fancier. So I was thinking it was kind of like the Mercedes-Benz, or maybe it's like the pay-for version of Google Chrome, type of thing. But Matt was telling me that Chromium is actually the open source version of Google Chrome, and that if you want to be a human guinea pig and be subjected to all kinds of experimental features and things that have yet to be rolled out on the Chrome platform, you can download Chromium and you can be that guinea pig. Does that kind of cover it, Matt?
Among other things, but it's one of the main, or it is the main web browser. So, like, if you have a Raspberry Pi, it is the main web browser on there. And it's, and I have a Raspberry Pi I use as kind of my test bench computer, and it's been fine. It's been quite stable. So I wouldn't hesitate to take a look at Chromium as a daily driver for web surfing. Uh-huh.
You know, I'm just feeling really inspired to develop an app that will run only on the Raspberry Pi platform and call it Vanilla Ice Cream. So, I'm sorry, I just couldn't resist.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly. So, we were looking at an article that I think it's really geeky, and it talks about the science. And I don't know how many like of those little facts in that article did you not know, Matt, before you read it? I mean, it was kind of eye-opening, wouldn't you say?
Well, I already knew that some of the numbers were astronomically high. So, like a cough of was 3,000 droplets. I figured it was higher than that. But a sneeze is like 30,000.
Yeah.
And they're going, and they're, when it comes out of your nose, it's going about 200 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great Mythbusters short, if you can find it, where basically they put snot simulant in Adam's nose and have him sneeze different ways, and then they take a black light and you can see, like, it got, you know, if you do a cough pocket where you cough in your hand or you just cough open, it shows you like kind of where that spatter is, and it's just stunning.
Okay.
How the different techniques, like not covering your face, make stuff go everywhere. And recently I saw I think it wasn't Berkeley. It was one. I think it was, but anyway, one of the larger research universities put out a thing where they basically put this green laser in a sheet, and then had somebody like talk out of it. And as the little particle of the droplets of speech droplets come out, it would, you know, they come out really bright where the laser sheet was, so you could see how much stuff there were. And then they had them wearing a surgical mask and how much it was reduced.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so the article we're talking about, it is on a website called erinbromage.com. I guess that would be the French pronunciation. It's erinbromage.com. And the title of the posting is "The Risks, Know Them, Avoid Them." And it just has a lot of, I mean, it doesn't feel like you're having, you know, it doesn't feel like you're having your finger wagged at you. So, you know, just some of the things, you know, one of the first things they point out is that, you know, everybody's been breathing a sigh of relief because the United States statistics of, you know, we have quote flattened the curve. Well, you know, they're pointing out statistically that no, New York State has flattened a really wicked curve. And the rest of us are our curves are actually still going up in a lot of states, and New York's flattening and their stellar job of flattening the curve has only doctored the statistics. And if you take and extract New York's statistics out of the overall mix, we still have a lot of work to do, is the bottom line. And so they talk about that, and they pose the question of where are people getting sick. And, you know, I didn't realize that the number one place that people get infected is in their own home. Did you know that, Matt?
Yeah, I saw the article on that this morning. Yes.
Yeah. So
I'm wondering if it's the packages coming in and they're not sanitizing them properly. I didn't get a chance to go
into any depth. No, it's the people coming in. It's when somebody in your home is, you know, still having, like, if you have an essential worker living in your home or whatever, that there are steps. And, you know, I'm sure that in certain number of cases, that's not even really possible to mitigate. But they're not taking the steps of, you know, stashing their clothing, you know, changing their clothing the minute they get in the door, you know, having a clean room to change in, or whatever, taking a shower immediately after they get in the house, you know, proper sanitizing, washing of hands, you know, just all of that stuff. And, you know, and then I guess if you're really out in the hot zone, you should still be, you know, wearing your PPE even around your loved ones in the house, you know, I suppose. So there's one. You know, a lot of people feel like they're like really getting risky when they step out the door, and it's actually in their own homes that where the you know where the real danger is. And so anyway, real quick, 970-963-2976 is our number. If anybody in our listenership has any interesting little tidbits on this subject or any other nerdy technical subject. One thing I didn't realize is that the public bathrooms are one of the most dangerous places. And, you know, I always thought, oh, they clean those all the time. That's probably one of the safer places. And
I'm still not eating off my keyboard.
Yeah, there you go.
Since it's 30 times dirtier than a toilet seat.
Yep, there you go.
At least on average.
Okay, it looks like we got a call coming in.
All right.
Hi, you're on with the Geeks.
Hi, I'm calling about being Baroque.
About
going for
Baroque. Going for Baroque, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I do hear a Baroque undertone, kind of a baseline in the conversation you're having here.
Okay.
But the real reason for my call, Louis, this is Terry Glassnap.
Terry, good to talk to you, buddy.
Matt McGrayer, is that right?
That's correct,
yep.
Howdy, Matt.
Hey, hello.
Gentlemen, here's what I'm wondering if you could help me with, these two things. With phones, with cleaning phones in this time we're in, what do you recommend for that? You know, iPhones and those other new devices that we carry with us and use a lot. How do you guys do that? How do you take care of cleaning them?
So what I would recommend is go to your phone's manufacturer and see how they recommend to clean it. So I know okay. Apple published, I know, for instance, Apple published a little how-to on their website on how to clean your iPhone in that case. Usually I just use a rag with a little like 70% rubbing alcohol and just rub it down real quick and get all the oil and stuff off of it.
And I have an OtterBox, so I very unjudiciously just douse mine in Marble Distillery sanitizer. So that's my prescribed
method. Oh,
really? Method. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
No, I go ahead and just wipe it down with sanitizer. And as long as you've got a good OtterBox that provides a relatively good seal between the, you know, I mean, technically, the alcohol is going to evaporate so quickly, there's no way it can possibly get into the inner workings of your device.
Well, and alcohol is often used as a electronics cleaner. So as long as it doesn't get into certain parts of the phone, you know, most of that stuff is alcohol tolerant, at least.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yep. Well, thank you for that.
You bet.
And then this one, embarrassed as I am to say this, I have a Mac PowerBook Pro from 2011.
A PowerBook? No, it's got to be a MacBook Pro, right?
MacBook Pro.
All right.
MacBook
okay.
Pro, yeah.
It's silver and black, right?
Yes. Mine is silver.
Okay.
And I failed to heed some of the warnings. Your disk is almost full.
Okay.
And then I think it got full, and the unit just like won't do anything. So conveniently, I had already purchased another from this year or last year, actually last year's model. So I'm able to work on that. But is there any hope that a machine like that could be restored, the photos and video and documents that are on it? Or
yeah, definitely. And you can, you know, give either Matt or myself a call, and we would be glad to help you with that. It's
okay.
The only thing that could exacerbate it is if you have a situation where it's a combination of the hard drive being full and the hard drive being bad. But that full hard drive is a pretty notorious culprit for a machine just, you know, pretty much giving you the middle finger and say, I'm not going to start up.
I see.
You know,
so I see. Yeah. You know, okay.
The only one that's more effective is putting.
What's that?
I was going to say the only thing that's more effective for bringing a Mac to a crawl is putting about 1,200 items on the desktop.
Oh, wow. That would explain some problems I'm having. No, I'm just kidding.
1,200. I see. Okay.
Yep.
Well, yep.
But as long as that's not the case, then if it's just full, then you're probably what you can do is put it in, what do they call that? Target disk mode, plug it into the new one and pull what you need off of it.
Yep. But you need a special cable. So
yeah, so go between those two. Yeah,
so give me a jingle and we'll talk.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I should call you. And the cable jockey might be able to work on that.
You bet.
Okay, gentlemen, I appreciate
all right,
you
man.
Guys do a great job.
Thanks a
Thank
lot,
you.
Terry. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Calling, buddy. Take care.
Sure. Bye. Yeah.
All right. And we still got a little bit of time. If you want to give us a call on GeekSpeak here, 970-963-2976. Our operators are standing by. And I was talking about the super savory subject of public restrooms. But the one thing that my biggest takeaway from that is the amount of droplets, the amount of water that gets aerosolized when a toilet in a public restroom gets flushed. Something that I just, didn't ever think about. And so I don't want to encourage people to not flush. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I kind of have this vision of myself, I'm gonna like make sure the door is open. I'm going to reach over. I'm going to push the handle. I'm going to run, anyway, that's just my take on it.
And, so wear your mask when you're doing your business?
Oh, always. I mean,
always.
Yeah, I have not. I have not taken my mask off in public places in 9 weeks. It's just my thing. So, and I found that the great thing about wearing masks is that you don't have to be nearly as good looking. The amount of your face that can be evaluated is like reduced by about 66%. So, it's and vanity is, of course, very high on my list. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So I was happy to know that breathing is actually a very low-risk behavior, that a single breath releases. So you have to contact about 1,000 virus. They're calling them virus particles. You have to contact about 1,000 virus particles in order to become infected, and a single breath, and each particle would be traveling in a droplet, and a single breath releases between 50 and 5,000 droplets. However, most of these droplets are low velocity and they fall to the ground quickly. And there are even fewer droplets released through nose breathing, and importantly, due to the lack of exhalation force with the breath, viral particles from the lower respiratory areas are not expelled. So, when you see people worrying about laboring over breathing on each other, I'm not saying you should go do that on purpose, but it's probably one of the lower risk behaviors that we have right now. It's those sneezes and coughs that really do it, It's yep. Anyway, I think we've talked about that enough. What did you have on your plate there, Matt?
I've been working on a backup script using R Clone, which has been a really neat utility that allows me to you can copy information between all the different clouds, and you can copy stuff from local to the cloud or local to local, and it does a very good job of moving it all pretty seamlessly. It does error checking for the transfers, and it's just been a very neat utility. So I've been loaded on Windows machines and
you said it's
Mac
called
machines.
R Clone.
Yep.
Okay.
And it works with the list is ginormous, but the big ones are like for example, I had a client that had a bunch of data on a legacy server that needed to be put into Google Drive. Followed the directions to connect to Google Drive, said, hey, here's the folder I want to copy, send it to this folder in Google Drive, and it got interrupted, and then I just ran the command again, and it just went up and made sure everything got transferred, and it's was super easy to do, at least from my perspective. But
is there,
it's more of a technician thing.
Yeah, is there a way to tell it to automatically retry so many times if something goes wrong? Does it have a fault tolerance to it?
You just rerun the command.
Okay.
So it it asks the server and says, hey, what do you have? And it looks at what it has locally, and then it compares all of those, and then it goes, and it just sort of picks up where it left off.
Got it. Yeah, because it seems like that would be really handy. A couple of my favorite tools are, I'm sure you probably use Carbon Copy Cloner, don't you, Matt?
Which is using rsync commands in the background.
Oh,
which
is it? Okay.
Which is another utility I use all the time in the command line. But
yeah. So, Carbon Copy Cloner is a great, just for our listeners that might need something like that. Carbon Copy Cloner is a great tool for copying large amounts of data or even small amounts of data from a folder on your Mac. It's a Mac utility. And you can basically, you plug in an external hard drive and say you want to copy your entire pictures or documents folder over. And especially if you are having some, if you're starting to suspect that maybe your hard drive is getting a little bit, glitchy, then Carbon Copy Cloner will, it'll go ahead and do the copy job, and it'll jump over problems. And then it'll give you a warning, and it'll say if you want to give it another try, and we'll try some different tricks, go ahead and run the copy job again. And I've had really good luck with pulling it over. And then have you ever used a tool called Unstoppable Copier on the PC, Matt? Are you familiar with that one?
No, I've heard of it, but I've never used it.
Yeah, it comes from a website called roadkill.net. It's one of my favorite website names. And that's Roadkill with one L, by the way. And they have a program called Unstoppable Copier, and it pretty much does the same thing. I've only had it like completely halt one time, I did a copy job the other day, and it actually ran into a disk that it had so many problems with. And but the great thing is when it gets stuck, you can hit the skip button. And it just goes on its merry way and just keeps copying. It doesn't just give up, So, it's not another tool for the same purpose. So,
yeah, I use my recovery software like that when the drive's really, really on its last leg.
Yep.
Because it'll just go, oh, that file's wrong, and it'll either just put in blank data or it'll just skip the file entirely, depending on how you have it set up.
Yeah. No, that's all good. So. Let's see. What are some of our other news stories today? Notice that Uber is really taking a hit on this whole COVID-19 thing. Looks like they cut another 3,000 jobs. You were saying you thought that their stock was taking a bit of a pounding.
Yeah, I didn't look. I just saw the headline and moved on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Apple's going to be reopening their stores, but you better expect to wear a mask. So, if you're one of those card carrying, I don't wear a mask, people, don't go to the Apple store. And, so let's see, what are some other good fun stories we got here today? Looks like the upper part of Michigan has been reopened.
I
want to know what exactly that means. I mean, how upper are they talking? Are we talking the Upper Peninsula, which would be kind of like saying, oh, by the way, Siberia is open again for business. So, all right. So we are coming up on the end of our time. And I would like to thank Matt McBrayer for remoting in. And I'd like
to... Thanks for running the board, Louie.
Well, I wish I could say I was. I'm going to give a special shout out to Gavin, who's like very unauspiciously running the board back here, and he's being very low key on the down low. So,
all right.
Anyway, so we will be back in a couple weeks. Is it a couple weeks, or we'll be back on the first Monday of the first Monday of June? Wow, that's hard to believe.
Which is the first. So
yep.
We'll be back Monday 4:30 on the 1st. Yeah.
All right. Good deal. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. And from the heart of the geeks to yours, y'all
be well.
Yep. Have a great day.